It's Thursday, June 3rd. I'm Jeff Schwartz alongside Get Going. This is Jeff Schwartz, Smarter Than You. Welcome back, everyone. Hope you've had a good couple of weeks. Hope you had a good and peaceful and enjoyable Memorial Day weekend. We are back. Football, 100 days away as of the day we are recording this. College football is even closer, by the way, less than 3 months away. And Gabe, I cannot wait for football to be back. We're going to have a fun show for everyone today. We'll talk about Julio. We'll talk about Aaron Rodgers. We'll talk about fans who can't control themselves now that we're back. We'll also have a fun exercise. We're going to have all the contenders in football. We're going to evaluate their rosters. But more importantly, we're going to evaluate who's the one player they should trade for. We'll go through all the contenders. We'll have some fun with it regarding the Julio trade. Gabe, how are you?
I'm great, Jeff. I want to just peel the curtain back a little bit for the audience. People who listen to this show, especially this time of year, clearly dedicated to your life, hearing little things about you. So if they follow you on Instagram and Twitter, they should. If they don't, but if they do, they know you've been traveling out west. We got together in real life.
Yes.
And our wives met.
Yes.
We talk about them regularly on here. They met. It went great, except the place we met never brought you your meal.
No, never brought my food. Yeah, the best part was our wives having zero idea of what we actually do. It's just the most amazing thing ever. I just tell my wife, I'm going to record a podcast. She doesn't know what it is, what I do, nothing. You're doing your sleep training stuff, so you guys are all over the place as well. I love it. Yeah, so we were at this Tapas place, and it was hard to find a reservation. Still in California, right? Still regulations, still things happening. You got to get a reservation. You can't just really walk up anywhere. And we found this place right on the water, down Washington Boulevard. And what part of town is that, by the way? Venice?
That's Venice.
Okay,
you
Venice.
Were in Venice.
I was
you were
in
right
Venice.
At the Venice Pier.
Venice Pier. That's where we were. Down. So we get there. It's crowded. They seat us on time and everything. And we ordered four exact things, okay? It's a Tapas place. We ordered an appetizer. We ordered oysters and shrimp cocktail. Those showed up 45 minutes. It took forever. They brought us a basket of fries, which you and your wife ended up eating because they were basically like, hey, sorry, we couldn't bring your actual food. Here's things you did not order. And then we ordered like a tuna pokey thing and fish tacos. And the tuna pokey shows up. And like an hour and a half later, I tell the waitress, like, hey, the fish tacos didn't show up. Just don't even bother. I ordered four things, Gabe. I couldn't even bring. And the worst part, by the way, is not that I didn't have my food, whatever. I'll survive without eating. I probably need to eat less calories. It said, I watched them bring food to everyone around me the entire time I was there. Like, that's the worst part. It's like, dude, I ordered four things at a Tapas place, not very much food, and I saw everyone else get their food. Where's my fish tacos at?
Yeah, and every other place on the block and within a mile of there serves fish tacos, and it's not hard to get a fish taco in Venice, California, and yet you could not get it. I had a couple drinks in that time and a lovely conversation, but watching you not get to eat was funny. You just to go back even further, when Jeff and I were texting about how we would meet up, and my life is complicated with my 1,000 kids and babysitters, etc. And Jeff said, hey, well, we're going to eat really early, but if you want to meet up after your kids go to bed, I could just have a second dinner. The idea of I would meet you for dinner number two was hilarious to me. So
by
you
dinner
ended up
two,
having
I mean,
half a dinner.
I would have had like a short dinner one, and then my wife would have had with dinner two would have been my wife having more cocktails, and then we end up we end up having just one dinner. It was lovely. It was a lot of fun. Look, I love going back home to Los Angeles. I mean, kind of just the west side, we near the beach. It's enjoyable to come home. I mean, the number one thing about the West Coast is sports watching. Number one thing, okay? Because all the time, my kids don't get to watch sports because they go to bed on the East Coast like 7:30, 8 o'clock. And back home at 4 o'clock, 4 p.m. on any weekday, major sports are already on. NBA playoffs, NHL playoffs, East Coast baseball is already on. You're at dinner. Like, we watched all these sports the entire time I was on the West Coast. With, you know, college softball, we watch baseball, we watch basketball and hockey with the kids because it's on TV. Come back here. I mean, Lakers, they play tonight at 10 Eastern. I'm not staying awake to watch that game. I wish I would, but I'm not going to make it awake. I went to bed last night at 9:30. So I enjoyed the West Coast, and it was a lot of fun seeing you and getting together. And hope to be out there more often. The major news now, Gabe, are these fans, man. Like, come on, fans, figure it out.
Yeah, well, so I'm going to throw a theory out there, and people may tell me this is not true. This type of stuff we've seen a lot in the NBA the last few days rarely happens out West because The games start earlier, so people are a little less lubricated, not as many drunk people, and people generally are a little more chill and not obsessive about their teams out here. You might say that's a negative a lot of the time, but when it comes to fans acting unruly and being frankly dangerous and disrespectful, you don't see it as often. We've now seen it at a bunch of games in the NBA playoffs, people getting players getting spit on, having things thrown at them, having really nasty stuff said to them and their families. It could be that this is sort of like when there's a shark attack, then the news is obsessed with talking about sharks for weeks, and that this kind of the sort of a thing that goes on all the time. But it really does feel like this NBA postseason, yeah, there's been a lot of bad behavior from fans caught on camera. So takes range everywhere from the bubble was better because fans suck.
No.
Right? That's not a good take.
Bad take.
Or it was better when fans could get punched in the face by players and they knew the consequences. I think that's also not the right take, although maybe shrug a little.
I mean, I Big Cat on his podcast, part of my take, is talking about like a one-time assault, which, look, I mean, if fans knew we would react that way, a one-time consequence-free assault, it would change a lot of this. I think it's a couple things, Gabe. It's one, that we finally have fans back in the stands, right? Which has been so, so awesome. We've seen it in basketball and hockey and baseball. And fans are drinking, they're back in the stadiums, and they're fired up to be there. Not excuses at all for throwing water bottles, for spitting on players, for dumping popcorn on them. And look, it is mostly happening in New York, Boston, Philly, but in Utah, those fans can't stop saying racist stuff all the time. Utah, Salt Lake City, get it together, man. Just be quiet, okay? Stop talking that way. It's so frustrating. I have my radio co-host lives in Salt Lake City. He's so frustrated by it. But this is what Utah's become, right? They've had multiple instances now where they can't shut up and they can't say racist comments to families and players. And look, it's not all the fans, right? But again, the minority, right? The vocal minority are the ones that we focus on in sports media, news media. This is what we see. We see water bottles being thrown and popcorn. Again, the popcorn doesn't hurt Russell Westbrook, but dude just got hurt. He's walking off the court. You don't want shit thrown at him. I have people say, oh, it's you're millionaires. You can deal with that. Is that really? Really? We can deal with it? Am I allowed to just walk up to anyone who makes $1 million at an arbitrary cutoff line, obviously, and just throw a water bottle at them if I don't like their work they did that day? I mean, like that's not what a ruling society is. It's just respect, basic respect for us. Don't throw stuff at us. But Gabe, the question is, I think for the NBA, look, they're never going to cut off drinking. Okay, they're not going to cut off drinking. But in other sports, there's a barrier between the fans and the players, right? In football, there's a barrier. And again, you can talk. I don't mind if you say non-racist shit-talking to me as a player, okay? I don't care. And sometimes we dish it back to you. Baseball, right? There's a barrier. And now there's a net behind the backstop that goes out, you know, down a foul territory. But look, even then, like, you know, the batting circles away from the fans, okay? The on-deck circles away from the fans. Dugouts are covered, obviously. The NBA, man, they're right there. Like, literally right there. I wonder if the NBA is going to end that game. Going to put some barrier between the players and the fans.
Well, fans are costing themselves the chance to be as close as they are. One of the coolest things about the NBA is how close you are. I mean, a star player can literally dive into your lap. We've seen that. It's fun. It creates moments. And the fact that players, you can hear feet, you know, 30 rows up, you can hear feet shuffling on an NBA court. They can hear you talking when they're in a timeout. They look up at you. That is a cool feature if you know how to behave. So it would be a real shame if the league had to change something about this. I'm sure they don't want to. It's also the most expensive seats in the building are the ones closest to the court. They don't want to give up the revenue. But I'm curious if you think that the types of stuff we're seeing has always been happening, is happening in all sports, and we're just paying attention to it better now? Or is there something changing in fandom? And would this happen in the NFL because of those barriers you talked about?
Well, I mean, we've had stuff, people throw stuff at us all the time in the NFL. Not all the time, but it happens often. We're wearing helmets, we're walking up the tunnel after a game, people stuff, you know, but we have a helmet on or something like that. I think we've gone to your point at the beginning, we've gone in two separate directions, which is kind of insane, right? Which is like, you know, this happens all the time, or we're overreacting. It's kind of in the middle, right? It doesn't happen all the time, but it happens enough to where we know it's happening. I mean, the spitting thing, it blows my mind. The fact that you think it's okay to spit on another human, no matter the situation. This is a freaking basketball game. It's not like Trae Young turned around and told him to go F himself. He just spit on Trae Young. He spit on a basketball player who was 3 feet away from him. The water bottle, Kyrie, okay, you're upset he stomped on your poor little leprechaun logo for literally half a second. Come on, guys, grow up a little bit. This is going to be a topic now, Gabe, the rest of the NBA postseason. It'll go into baseball, which doesn't have as many incidents like this. We have the naked people that run on the field. There was that person who hit in the tarp. But even yesterday, we're recording this not obviously on Thursday, but there was a fan that rushed the court in Washington where the Wizards are playing the Sixers, and a cop tackles the person. No one else moved. There was no other security or anywhere. I don't know if they don't have enough security at these games or they don't react quick enough. When we see a player run the field on the NFL or in baseball, there's like a zillion security guards attacking that player, the person. NBA, I don't know if the security's not good enough, if they're just lackadaisical with it, if they're not prepared for it because we have fans back in the stadium now. But if I was a player, I'd feel safe. I don't think you'd feel unsafe. But you have to wonder, like, where are the arenas doing enough to protect them from getting stuff thrown at them?
Well, let me throw this at you. I guess the answer is probably they're not doing enough to protect the players. That's what this week has seemed to suggest. But is it also more of a weirder psychological thing, right? So stay with me on this. I think that people have so much access to these athletes now through social media, have so much ability to say whatever they want and feel a part of the show. You're allowed to just tweet nasty stuff to people whenever you feel like it. And it rarely comes with any consequence. I wonder if like the mindset of a fan has shifted in a way that you really think of yourself in real life as the version of yourself online. That I would say this to Jeff on Twitter, and now I can't tell the difference between Twitter and real life. So when I'm at the stadium, I think I might spit on Jeff, which is insane. Why would anyone ever think they could do that? Do you think that could be part of it?
I think it could be. I think maybe there's people have a more visceral reaction to players because they get to see what they tweet and disagree with them and hate on them even more than usual. And maybe they feel too, like because of that, there's a relationship where you could throw a bottle at someone or spit on someone, which again, never do. By the way, one of your... the team you root for in college football, won a USC defensive end one time spit in my face. It was resolved over many years in the NFL, but we got it resolved eventually. That's just not acceptable. So I do wonder if there is that. But look, it comes down to this, Gabe, is there is no punishment for when this happens, right? Being banned from a stadium is not a punishment. Hey, how does that work? The facial recognition software, you can probably get in if you want to, as long as you don't buy the ticket under your name. And then your boys give you attaboys. Oh, sweet, buddy, you got thrown out for throwing something to Kyrie. Awesome, good for you. I know he's being prosecuted. Who knows if that actually sticks, but that's what has to happen, right? There has to be some sort of prosecution or fine. Or you let the players assault the fan. Either one. Those are the way. There's no repercussion, right? Because they know that if we go in the stands to fight someone who throws a bottle, it's because guess what? If I came up to you and I threw a bottle at your face 5 feet away from you, you would fight me in real life. You would come over and fight me. But they know we're not going to fight them. But what if we did? Obviously, that's not going to happen. But if we did, though, we would get sued. We'd lose our job. We'd lose money. You would lose nothing. So there's an imbalance of respect here between what we're doing as players on the field or court and what you're there to do as a fan.
Yeah. And check out Kevin Durant, who I think had the wisest words on this yesterday. He got quoted with the hot takeier version of it. But there's about a 2-minute clip of him answering this questions about this in a press conference. And I thought he sounded as smart as anyone on this topic has. It's worth checking out. I think he summed up how a lot of smart players feel.
I'm also curious, the players have made a reference, and people as well, like that to circus animals or being at the zoo. Do we throw stuff at circus animals and zoo animals? Like that thing that we do as well in public that I don't know about?
No, you don't do that.
like who throws stuff at animals at the zoo?
Yeah. And then there's a whole other end of this conversation, which I'm glad we're not going.
Yeah, into, we don't have to touch that.
Has a lot to do with who the players get, you know, which players get worse treatment and who treats them that way.
Correct.
And all those
implications. That's a very, very, very valid point. But we're just not the place for it.
We can just say bad people are bad.
Oh, yeah. 100%. I agreed.
Let's get to football or I guess, drama tied to football. There's no football in this topic. So Aaron Rodgers is still, of course, the biggest offseason headline. We knew this would be the case. Last I saw him, I think any of us saw him, he was hanging out at a Hawaiian waterfall with the guy from Whiplash. By the way, big win for Miles Teller, coming out looking more jacked than Aaron Rodgers in those pictures.
I mean, Aaron Rodgers, not, he's a quarterback. Who you think jack quarterbacks, I mean, besides, okay, besides your,
a health-obsessed NFL quarterback should have a better body than a child actor.
I mean, the only quarterback who was ripped was your boy, who won a game completing 2 of 8 passes.
Don't try to do this to Tim Tebow. We can do him if you want to talk about him. There's a lot of great photos of him out there. Let's talk about Aaron Rodgers. So he's kind of MIA right now. But according to The Athletic, the Packers would trade Rodgers if they, quote, believed he was truly committed to never playing for them again. The implication, of course, is that they think they're playing a game of chicken, that Aaron will ultimately calm down and come play for them, or they would trade him. So I guess I'm curious, like, has everyone forgotten the history of star quarterbacks in Green Bay and how Aaron Rodgers became the quarterback? Like, the Packers tried this game with Brett Favre, and eventually they had to go with Aaron Rodgers because the game of chicken didn't really work out. Isn't it possible this is just going to end in Aaron Rodgers being like, no, I wasn't kidding, I'm not playing for you, and now Jordan Love is your quarterback? Couldn't that be what happens?
It totally could, but let's think about it from Rodgers' perspective. Are you going to retire over this? Are you never going to play again? Because the Packers own his rights if he retires, right? So he'd have to be traded if he came back to NFL to play again. If he doesn't play this year, are we saying he's retiring, Gabe? He's never playing again? Is that what we're saying?
I can't see Aaron Rodgers hanging it up.
Right. So if the Packers can say, all right, well, we're not trading you. You are our quarterback. We've been in the championship game 2 years in a row. You're not going anywhere. You either show up to us or you retire. I mean, they can call his bluff because they have Jordan Love on the roster. If they did not, he'd be in a better position. Also, and I was probably a little bit this way too. I don't watch Jeopardy, so I don't know if Aaron Rodgers was good or not. I don't know who the front runner is to take Trebek's spot. It seems like after some polling, it's Ken Jennings. Makes sense. But I just assumed that Rodgers was getting the Jeopardy job, I guess. Doesn't feel like he's getting the Jeopardy job. So now he's going to do nothing and not play football anymore. Like, the Packers feel like they have more leverage now because of the Jeopardy poll that came out and where the fans are aligned in Jeopardy. Plus also the idea that probably he's not the favorite to get that job. And again, they own his rights, Gabe. They could be like, hey, we're not trading you. Okay, fine. Retire. Don't play. I don't think Rodgers has retirement in him. Maybe he sits out this year. But again, next year, the Packers, again, still own his rights.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think the Jeopardy thing is really even relevant. I mean, he either wants to continue playing football or he doesn't. So I think the obvious answer is no to the question I'm about to ask, but is there any chance he'll show up at these voluntary OTAs later this week? Like, that seems like of course he won't, right?
No, so it's a good point. So he has always been off-season workouts, okay? But remember, last year when the new CBA got finalized, about a week beforehand, Aaron Rodgers, who was not part of the process at all, rushed in at the last second and said, I want offseason workouts eliminated, okay? So for him to sit out makes more sense when you think about it like that, right? He doesn't want to be there anyways. Even if he was happy, he still doesn't want to be there, right? He wants to be in Hawaii, hanging out with his fiance, with famous friends, just living the best life. He's got the long hair now, kind of like a midlife crisis hair thing happening a little bit, just living his best life. So he didn't want to be there anyways. The holdout isn't as important, but the question is about the wide receivers. The wide receiver is going to show up. That to me is, the wide receivers have even less leverage than Aaron Rodgers does. Like, Devontae Adams is not going to play if Rodgers doesn't play. Okay, like, there's a whole boycott of players if he doesn't. So I'm curious to see the wide receivers show up to kind of get used to playing with Jordan Love.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I don't know why they would tie themselves to Aaron Rodgers.
They seem to have. They didn't show up.
I mean, it's nice of them to show support to their quarterback, and I'm sure ownership, GM, whoever, can kind of look the other way, but they're not actually going to be able to tie their whole careers and futures to Aaron Rodgers being unhappy. That doesn't make a lot of sense. So let me ask you this. If we believe, let's go back to this quote from The Athletic reported, that if they believed he was truly committed to never playing for them again, they would trade him, the Packers. So let's say they do trade him. What are the cap implications of that, and has the ability to trade him changed since the last time we really spent time on this.
All right. So there's all the June 1st stuff, right? Where June 1st kind of changes the... And I never understood how that works, to be honest with you.
Oh, God. I was coming here to get smarter from you.
I know, dude. I've tried to read up on it. It doesn't feel like... I kind of know, but I mean, so basically, a post June 1st trade allows teams to split his dead cap charge over two seasons. That's what it is about June 1st. So, it says here the Packers still need to make the fundamental decision whether they want to trade him. A trade of June 1st would cost them $14 million in dead charge in 2021, as opposed to the original $31 million that would have occurred. That $17 million difference would be incurred in 2022.
Right. So they'd be taking a pretty bad cap hit 2 years in a row instead of a catastrophic cap hit 1 year. But the fact is, they're screwed either way. It really messes with their ability to build a proper roster if they trade him now. So they don't really want to trade him now. And there aren't really many teams who can or would want to take him on right now, right? So we kind of,
Denver would take him, but not, I don't think much more.
So we're down to one team, Denver, who doesn't even give him a better chance of winning, which apparently is what he wants. Like, he's not going to have a higher odds of winning a Super Bowl in Denver this year.
No, probably not.
So is this really just about doing, again, what Brett Favre used to do? Extracting something, skipping a lot of camps, you know, generating some buzz. Like, is he basically just holding his own team hostage to ultimately stroll into camp at the last second, try to win a Super Bowl, and then do this again next year? Isn't that what we're about to enter, like, 2 or 3 years of this?
Yeah, it seems like Rodgers is upset more about management, you know, not keeping him in the loop about events that are happening on the team. And I understand where he's coming from, but I also get where management's coming, because management is not going to let Rodgers dictate what happens on the roster. But management can also just let him know, hey, man, we're thinking about signing these wide receivers, or we're thinking about drafting these certain players. So Rodgers, even though the Packers aren't taking his advice, Rodgers feels in the loop about what they're doing, which I think is important, right? Because, look, some quarterbacks do not care. Some do. Rodgers seems to care. The Packers should try to keep him more involved. Again, that doesn't mean they're going to do exactly what he says, but Rodgers saying, hey, I want X, Y, and Z wide receiver. The Packers say, you know what, Rodgers, you're right. We'll try to get him for you. Now, again, doesn't mean they're going to get him, but Rodgers feels involved in the discussion. Look, when I was planning my wedding, okay, my wife, was like, originally was like, you're not helping me plan enough, blah, 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 blah. So during the planning of the wedding, I attended all the calls. I nodded, yes. And at the end, she's like, man, you were so helpful. I go, we did everything you wanted to do. I just made you feel like I was being part of the process, right? That's what the Packers have to do with Rodgers. Just make him feel like he's part of the process, even though they do exactly what they want to do. I remember vividly, she's like, oh, you do. I go, what did we do that was, we did everything you wanted to do. I just was like, babe, I support you basically, right? So that has to be done here. And the Packers haven't seemed to figure that out yet. And I don't think it matters anymore, honestly. But I do not think still they will trade him. I think week one, it'll be Jordan Love or Rodgers sitting on his ass at home.
All right. Well, I mean, I guess we'll just talk about it again in a week or two whenever we have another show like this. For now, let's talk about a more likely trade to actually get executed. That, by the way, this comes back to the Packers quickly. If you type Julio Jones trade into Google, it like then auto-populates. You can get about 10 teams pop up there, because every team in the league thinks they have a chance at Julio Jones after he maybe accidentally made it very clear that he doesn't want to be in Atlanta anymore. See Shannon Sharp
if
on
you,
that
okay,
one.
So if you're producing that show,
yeah,
which I know you've been on some of those shows before.
No, I've helped produce that show before.
Okay, that exact show. How are you handling that? Like, was that something you think Shannon just like called him on the spot?
Yeah, I want to be careful just because I know some of those people. I don't know. I didn't ask anyone. I haven't talked to anyone over there. I have a feeling Shannon called him on the spot and for whatever reason believed that Julio understood he was on the air, and Julio probably did not understand he was on the air. And I'm sure, I hope, that they've Shannon has cleared that up. If an apology was needed, I'm sure that that was a honest miscommunication and Shannon wasn't trying to surprise him like that. But that's why you don't do things like that, because look how quickly it, you know, you can lose a lot of credibility. I'm assuming Shannon has enough credibility banked up with current players that he can make a mistake like that, say sorry, and move on. But I mean, who else is picking up his phone, you know, and not saying, yo, give me a minute? Like, I would just text him back, be like, just give me a sec, and then like make sure you weren't on the air when you called him back. But I don't think that they tried to like surprise Julio. That's not the kind of thing they would do.
Okay, I was just curious about that.
I really don't. I know people have a lot of theories on Skip, and I really don't think that that's what they were trying to do at all. I'm sure they felt awkward about it.
Well, there definitely was at least some reported blowback from the Falcons, NFL, from his agent and whatnot. All right, continue on, please. I was just curious.
Well, also, I want to continue, but let me just say, I think as a guy who's been in the media his whole life, not a guy like you who played in the league or a person who worked for a team or the league, I think that any time a team or the league has the chance to hammer people in the media and actually has some legs to stand on and pick up some leverage and basically say, you owe me one, they're going to do it. So it doesn't surprise me at all that people called whoever, the folks on that show or the network, and said, you owe us one. This was screwed up of you. You messed up. Because they're constantly looking for leverage. That's just negotiation.
That 100% makes sense. I believe you, yeah.
So Julio Jones is the guy who's going to get traded. In years past, we all in NFL media sort of gather around a player here or there who we're all convinced is going to get traded somewhere and then take that team to become a Super Bowl contender. It was Jadeveon Clowney. It was J.J. Watt. It was Le'Veon Bell. The list goes on and on. Can we look at the teams where Julio might end up and use this as a jump off for what they should actually trade for, whether it's him or something else? Can we do that now?
Dude, I would love to do this. We have written down the playoff contenders from last year, plus a few others. I jot a few down, and I'm so excited to do this. This is not as intense as like Bill Barnwell's trade article he writes, which is incredible every year. And we're going to keep this light and loose. Like, there's some guys that you know are not tradable that we're gonna pontificate on whether or not they'd be very helpful for the team. So you want to start with the Packers? You want to start there?
Yeah. Number one, is Julio the guy they should trade for? Would that solve all the problems?
I mean, I put down this trade for a new general manager. It feels like that would solve all the issues, right? Getting a new GM in there and Rodgers shows up tomorrow. Not going to happen, obviously. Look, to appease Rodgers, a wide receiver would be the way to go. I would argue they need to continue to help defense, right? So whether it's a cornerback or another safety or whoever else, but to solve the problems they have currently now, it'd be any wide receiver that you can find, right? It'd be Julio, Allen Robinson, DK Metcalf. It could be, you know, it could be Hopkins. It could be any wide receiver that Rodgers wants to take. I think that would solve Diggs as well. I'm trying to, maybe it's a tight end. Maybe it's Waller or Kelsey. Like, I feel like those would be the guys that would save this relationship.
Okay. Let me ask you something about that. In growing up, I always thought wide receivers just felt like there weren't enough balls to go around. So if you have some other great receiver on your team, he's taken away from what's on your plate. And now it seems in the last few years, like every great player just wants to be surrounded by other great players. And nobody's as worried about as many targets or as many, you know, touchdown passes. If you can get some other guy to take double coverage off you, great. Is that the attitude that receivers especially have these days?
I think a couple things. One is that there's so much money now. Now, this is a down year for the cap. There's so much money now that players are getting paid even if they don't have 1,500-yard seasons, right? Like, you're getting the money if you have the talent, right? Because a team will see – and look, and a lot of these guys, too, that want to play is kind of like the super team – already are established, right? They've got their money. Now they want to win a Super Bowl. So I think those are the reasons why players are okay kind of forming these super teams. Yes, when you're young, probably you don't want to go somewhere where you have to split all the reps. But the older you get, the more you've been paid, the more you're not winning a title, the allure of winning a Super Bowl. Look, I just speaking strictly for like the media perspective of this, as someone breaking into media, just one single job. My job would have been a lot easier if I had won a Super Bowl ring. Like 1,000 times like that's how important, just for that, right? That doesn't count with the marketing experience I could have had or other things in my life, speaking or whatever else, just from like my little job, winning a ring would have been much easier for my ascension in the media. Players know that too. Players know that a ring solidifies their career, brings more money and more power and more glory, and they want to go chase that ring. And if they have to do so by getting 30 less catches and 300 less yards after they've been paid, they're fine with doing that.
Okay. Yeah, well said and good comparison. And I'm thinking of other guys who have jobs like yours who happen to have a ring. Who are great at what they do, but so are you. And well, yeah, you're right.
A lot of guys working at major networks as far as on television every day have Super Bowl rings. It's hard to find. I mean, Dan Orlovsky might be the highest person at any network who doesn't have a ring. As far as who talks to the NFL.
I could probably spend a minute thinking about that and maybe come up with another name or two, but you're right. He's definitely the guy with the lightest on-field resume and the highest profile at a network.
Right. Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about the Bears. I mean, it'd be fun to see Julio go there, but they got Allen Robinson. I guess he isn't all that happy there anyway. Or at least he wasn't. But they got the quarterback now. It seems like there's some new optimism. What do they need to trade for?
Yeah, you know, they're actually not that bad of a team. They're about the rosters because, you know, defensively, they've been good now for many years. I mean, look, defensively, I think you'd always find a bookend to Khalil Mack. But we know Akeem Hicks back and healthy, ready to go. I mean, that, you know, two pass rushers there. Linebackers are good. Maybe you look at the back end of the secondary. I think maybe. But to me, it's probably an elite tight end. You have Jimmy Graham. They have Cole Kmet, who they drafted last year. But to me, if you can add a playmaker tight end, whether it's Waller, Kelce, we're gonna repeat a lot of the same names because a lot of the same guys fit a lot of places, but a tight end would help your young quarterback a lot, like a stud tight end. I'm not saying that Graham and Kmet would, but like adding Kelce, Waller, Kittle, those type of guys. Yeah, that to me feels like what would help Fields the most is a stud tight end.
Yeah. My impression also is a young mobile quarterback needs someone who can just get into open space 6 or 8 yards downfield, like buy him a few seconds and then be a dump off. And tight ends, the way that tight ends play these days, the good ones at least, are built for that. You know, you block, you buy the quarterback a second or two, and then you just sort of scrape along the line of scrimmage with him and grab it when it's near you. All right. So a tight end would be the trade. There's not an obvious tight end, like you said earlier.
Yeah.
These are all somewhat fictional ideas, but there's no obvious tight end for them to go get. All right, the Saints, so they lose their Hall of Fame quarterback in Breeze. They have a capable quarterback in Jameis now, and then whatever we think of Taysom Hill. What do they need to trade for? They have receiver, running back, two quarterbacks. Yeah. It seems like the answer has to be defense, right?
I think the answer is a big play wide receiver outside of Thomas, like someone to kind of help out Winston. Obviously, look, quarterback, you'd say for half these teams, you'd be quarterback, but let's avoid that, right? Let's say Winston is a guy. Look, defensively, you have to hope Marcus Davenport can kind of fill the role of Trey Hendrickson. Cameron Jordan's elite. I mean, maybe D tackle's the way to go. You look obviously anyone could use Aaron Donald, but defensive tackle. But I'm not sure that really impacts their team as far as winning and losing. I think another wide receiver from Michael Thomas to help Michael Thomas, not instead of him, is the way to go for offensively to help Jameis Winston out, bring themselves another wide receiver.
Well, if we were going to pretend that we thought that the Saints were real contenders, then we would have to think that they're going to need to go through the Bucs in a meaningful place. So they'll have to play them twice in the regular season. They would theoretically have to play them to win the NFC. So what do they need to have a better chance of beating the Bucs?
Well, the funny part is they beat him twice last season in the regular season.
They were a lot better team, it seemed.
Yeah, I mean, the Bucs got better throughout the, you know, right. To me, it's hitting Tom Brady, right? So I would say that if that's the angle, then it's getting a pass rushing three technique. It's Aaron Donald, but, Hicks, it's someone that inside can really get into Tom Brady's face. We know that what hurts Tom Brady in the past is pressure kind of up the middle, right? So it's not necessarily edge pressure. It's kind of quote unquote getting him off his spot, right? And finding a way to get him kind of, in his face right away. And it feels like that, you know, someone inside, some big lug D tackle inside, they can really kind of hurt Tom Brady. You know, a Chris Jones, I think, would be a fantastic fit there as far as a guy that would fit kind of what they're looking for.
Okay. Let's go to the Seahawks, who for the first few weeks last season looked like the obvious best team in the NFC. It kind of didn't play out that way. I don't think that Julio Jones would make a whole lot of difference there. They've got a couple good receivers. So if they were going to make a big trade in this fictional land, what are they trading for? It seems like defense.
Yeah, I could see defense updating their secondary, continuing to get pass rushers. I mean, they're just so young on defense and kind of very unproven. So any pass rusher, I think, would be very welcome in Seattle. So, again, you could pick anyone you want, Myles Garrett, Von Miller, Watt. I mean, again, like this exercise, maybe not specific players, but we're looking at specific needs. But I could also see them like, you know, as much as they want to run the ball, a guy like Quentin Nelson coming in and playing guard for them, especially with Russell Wilson bitching about protection, that feels like some guy that Pete Carroll could get behind. Just a big mauling guard coming in. You still want to run the football a bunch. Defensively, still some deficiencies, but that feels like, a Wyatt Teller at right guard. I know they traded for Gabe Jackson, but one of these big interior offensive linemen that could, you know, move people off the ball.
Okay, I like that answer. That's variety. That's why we're listening to you, Jeff, because I think most people would just come up with a bunch of wide receiver names to mention. How about the Rams? I think we're gonna be in a spot where late November, early December hits, and everyone's going like, "Holy shit, the Rams guys," because they were damn close last year with a quarterback who really wasn't great, and Matt Stafford has something. I don't know if it's it, but he has something. So. Are the Rams like one tiny piece away from being a real Super Bowl contender? And if so, what's the piece?
So for the Rams in my notes, I literally put a question mark, right? Because there's many different ways they can go. I guess the question is Stafford enough on offense, right? Is he enough with, you know, Cooper and Van Jefferson and Robert Woods and Higbee and the running backs they have with Cam Akers and Henderson? And I think that's enough, right? Offensive line wise. Some moving parts here and there, but they got enough to get it done. To me, it feels like they've been lacking this for a couple of years now. It's an elite edge rusher, a guy you can count on to continue to rush the passer all the time, right? Just a guy that can. He's, we can't double Aaron Donald. So a guy you put Donald and Myles Garrett on the same side, you put Donald and Watt on the same side. That feels like the missing piece they needed on defense now for a couple of years.
Wow. Okay. So, I mean, and that what you're describing, though, is a pretty good scenario for them. If you think that their offense is good enough, and we already know their defense is very good, and with this coaching staff, they've been to a Super Bowl. I don't know. You do the betting stuff usually with Matt. Like, I'm taking the over on the Rams total this year. I just see it. Maybe I'm LA biased, but, like, they have to be a better team with Matt Stafford. They just have to be. He might lose a game here and there, but he'll win them some games they would have lost.
Probably, yeah. I just think the division is very tough. Like, I would take a healthy Niners team over the Rams.
Yeah. Well, they're confusing.
The problem is the Niners just aren't always healthy, you know?
Yeah, and we don't quite know what'll happen at quarterback there. All right, I'm going to name a few more teams. We can pick up the pace on some of these. In the division, the Cardinals. We fell in love with them briefly last year. They didn't really have it by the end. What do we make of them? What do they need?
Oh, very simply, they need a new coach.
So trade for a coach.
Yeah. Any coach who's not Cliff Kingsbury.
Okay.
Simple.
In DC, they have a coach. Now they have a quarterback in Fitzpatrick. What does the football team need? Because I also really like their over. I feel like their defense is the best in the league. Their offense is fine. What do they need?
Yeah, their defense is fantastic. To me, it would be tight end, elite tight end.
Tight end.
Yeah.
Interesting. Here's a question you might just laugh at me for. I wondered why Brandon Marshall wasn't really, like, if he'd come along a few years later in his career, or excuse me, if he had come into the league a few years later in the league's evolution, I think we would have talked about him the way Travis Kelce is a tight end. Like, he's just a big, strong dude who'd throw one block and then get open. Okay. Is Julio Jones, like, could he be that in the second phase of his career?
Look, here's the thing. Travis Kelce used to be an elite blocker. As he got older, he doesn't do it as much. They have someone else do it for him. Kittle can block. Waller can block. There's still, you still have to block at that position.
Yeah.
So, like, I don't think Brandon Marshall or Julio, like, that's not, and no one's going to treat them as a tight end, right? Part of why tight ends work so well in the NFL is defenses treat them as tight ends, and they get covered by linebackers and whatnot. No one's going to treat Julio or Brandon Marshall as a tight end. They're going to put a corner on them.
Okay. So you can't, just by putting him in that position and putting another receiver out wide, you can't, like, find mismatches.
I don't think so, no.
Or if you put him there and his assignment was to block, he would not make the same kind of blocks and you'd have a dead quarterback.
I don't think he can do that.
All right, fair enough. The Bills barely need anything, but they got to get past the Chiefs somehow. We know they drafted a little bit more defense, try to put some pressure on Pat if they face him. What would they have to trade for? The offense looks good to me.
It's 1,000% pass rush. Like, I know they drafted two pass rushers, the kid from Miami, and they drafted a kid from Wake Forest. But to me, it's 100% pass rush. They could not touch Pat Mahomes last season. And so, look, again, we list off all the same guys we normally do, but to me, if they could trade for a defensive end or corner, those are the two positions I would go for. Really more, yeah. I'd probably maybe go for, yeah, corner, slot corner, safety, or pass rush. But it's not offense. You're correct on that.
All right. The Dolphins, Titans, Colts, maybe even Ravens and Steelers, they're all kind of in this bucket of, like, to me, 9-10 win teams that are lucky to win a playoff game. So does it matter what they would trade? Well, who cares what they would trade for?
Miami need a wide receiver, just quite simply. Yeah.
Even after the draft?
Yeah. I mean, Waddle's going to play, you know, kind of that inside slot guy for them. I think they could use one more guy, I think, on the edge. I know that they have Parker there, but I think as far as just one more guy to help two out as much as possible, you know, Fuller cannot be always counted on, you know, I think with his injury history. That or continuing to build up the offensive line. So you take, I know they drafted an offensive lineman as well. They have a pretty good roster, man.
They are good.
They got a really good roster.
So then let's go back to where we started here with the Dolphins then. Julio, because as silly as it is, there's like an Alabama thing starting to build there. And yeah, I don't know. Like, is Julio the answer?
That'll be a great trade for them, especially all the draft picks they have to give up. I saw today there was a quote where Tua said that he basically didn't learn enough of the playbook from last year. I'm going to pull up the quote right here. He said via Peter King, I didn't actually know the playbook necessarily really, really good, and that's no one's fault but mine, but my fault. So a couple of things to take away there. I know you're cringing a little bit.
So, I don't like to hear that.
Well, there's a couple why questions, which we don't have the answer to, right? Is it because, why, okay? Is it because he didn't put the time in to learn, okay? Is it because it was too complicated? Is it because he didn't know how much time he needed to put in, right? There's a difference between not putting enough time and not really knowing the responsibilities and the time it takes to be a great quarterback. Or was it altogether too overwhelming for him? Like, there's many why questions. I'm just saying, admitting that out loud, and the part about it when you say it's my fault, well, it is your fault, yes. But it makes me feel like it's kind of like the, I didn't do enough. Which I don't know. I'm not expecting, I don't know. But if you just say, hey, man, I just had a tough time, you know, kind of grasp the playbook and I'll do better this year. Okay, fine. But when you say it was my fault, it tends me to believe, maybe he's covering for himself, but or covering for the Dolphins, but I don't know. So that's a question for them. Yeah. But wide receiver.
It also means, I think he's trying to explain, there was a reason they had to go to Ryan in a few spots. I wasn't really ready. And that was the reason. Not that anyone thought he was a better player. Is that good to hear? But
because
I'm saying
we see, like, Herbert's ready to play, Burrow was ready to play. The idea of needing time to play now is not the way it works. But you can do that.
Yeah. All right. One of the Julio destinations that comes up first in Google is the Patriots, because obviously anytime any guy who had success wants to go somewhere else late in his career, that's where everyone says he's going to go. Is there any chance Julio Jones ends up in New England? And if so, does it help them?
So a couple of these teams I have specific guys for, right? Like some of them I just kind of have been like, okay, I don't know who these guys are, you know, but we know the position. It's Tom Brady. Trade for Tom Brady. Done.
That's it.
There you go.
Just trade Tom Brady back, and that's it. Well, so you've talked about Jimmy G. Others have.
It's quarterback. It's not Jimmy G. It's an elite quarterback. It's what they need.
Elite or elite in the Belichick mold?
I mean, a top 10 quarterback. But I mean, that's what they need.
So not and like Jacoby Brissett.
No. Like a top 10 quarterback is what they need.
All right. The Chiefs don't need much. They fixed the line. What else would you go get if you could make a trade?
Lavonte David of the Bucks. The Chiefs do not allow a lot of yards to wide receivers. At least they haven't last year. They allow a ton of yards to tight ends. Tight ends burn them. Give me Lavonte David, one of the better covering linebackers in the NFL. You know, maybe go safety in that spot, and you kind of, but you got a honey badger, right? I'm not sure you need a safety. So to me, it's Lavonte David, Fred Warner, maybe a Darius Leonard, but an elite level linebacker who could run sideline to sideline and then also take a linebacker up the seam.
All right. That was a great answer. You still think of them as the favorites, right?
Oh, easily. Yeah, by far.
Okay. I'll just ask this just to bother you, as if it matters. What do the Raiders need to trade for to be competitive?
New coach.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it's
going to... Pass rush, secondary. I mean, anything on defense. Name a position on defense. That's what they need to improve at.
Yeah, well, especially in that division, which gets me to the Chargers, who, again, I'm not just doing an LA bias thing. It seems like the Chargers are the team who could kind of put it together this year, at least start to compete.
It's kind of
in the
scary
AFC.
When you hear the Chargers might put it together. You're like,
I know, it makes you wonder, but they've done a lot of work improving in the last year and a half. What else could they do? What could they trade for?
It's a great question. So when you look at their roster, in that division, I mean, you could say corner, say linebacker. You know, you could help someone with Kenneth Murray, maybe another pass rusher to pair with Bosa. You know, they addressed the offensive line in the offseason. They got Jared Cook, but it still feels like a second tight end to help out Herbert would be so important for them. Out of all positions, I could see, like, you put Kelce in that offense with Herbert, and it just takes off.
Yeah. You're saying tight end a lot, which confirms how I feel about the league. Is like tight end is what you should teach your kid to be if he's got the body for it moving forward. That's the elite position in the NFL these days.
Agreed. It's hard to find an elite offense without a great tight end.
Yeah. All right. Well, the Steelers want to be that. They don't really have a great tight end. They have a million other things, including a new running back. Is there anything you'd trade for with the Steelers? The D's good.
Yeah, Deshaun Watson.
Fair enough. All right. Yeah. And we're waiting to find out if anyone wants to touch him at all. But is there going to be a Deshaun Watson trade at some point? No. You think that's really going to happen?
No, I think he'll be in the commissioner's exempt list for a little bit of time before they figure out. I think I saw the last update was a lot of the court cases aren't going to happen until 2022. So, you're in a weird spot if you're the NFL, right? You're this crime and punishment league or discipline league. We have a guy accused of, now again, I don't, to my knowledge, they're not criminal charges, right? They're civil charges. But again, the NFL fancy themselves on being this league that, you know, that they're going to punish every player, whether or not there's proof or good proof. And so I don't know what's going to happen with him. All right, lots of game there for a quick second, so I'll just wrap this up on my own. A couple of teams left that I have on my list of interesting acquisitions. Look, Baltimore is easily a big possession wide receiver, right? I mean, like, it's that simple, right? Whether it's DK, whether it's a Keenan Allen, a Hopkins, like a Julio, a big wide receiver. They need to give it one more shot with a big wide receiver in this offense. Tennessee Titans easily got like Jalen Ramsey to help in the secondary, add some swagger to that defense. Feels like that's the spot for him. And really one of my favorite ones to add, why went the Browns here? I think the Browns would be the biggest threat to the Chiefs. The Browns, to me, I think Kittle and that offense would be incredible for Baker Mayfield. It's actually one of my favorite of all this exercise is putting Kittle in this offense. I know you have Hooper. I know you have, I know you have, you know, the joke. I think that you put it on the sideline and put Kittle in this spot and let Kittle dominate in this Shanahan style offense. That's what I would do. So to me, again, the AFC has more exact comps, but fun exercise nonetheless. All right, guys, hope you enjoyed the show. We've got a lot more feedback. I appreciate it. Please rate, review, subscribe, and we'll talk to you guys next week. Have a great one.